history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you, seemingly ordinary Americans who have gone through extraordinary things for the sake of our freedom. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we learn so much. We're educated, we're entertained, so often we are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, it's two for the price of one as we meet a husband and wife in Oakdale, California. Mike and Doris Wanty have been married for 67 years. He served on the destroyer USS Lardner during World War II, while Doris was flying airplanes as a trailblazing female pilot. Ladies first, right? So we're going to start with Doris, who picked this rural spot for their cattle ranch because of its 360-degree view that includes, if you look due east with binoculars, the splendor of Yosemite National Park. And Doris, I understand that's where you were born, huh?
Yes, Yosemite.
Right on top of Half Dome or what?
No, in the valley. I was born in Yosemite Valley.
And you spent your early years there?
Yes, for till I was about six.
Your dad was a park ranger there?
Yes, he was. He was one of the first ones when the park was made.
So many millions have visited that park in all the years since.
Yes, they have.
Is there something you remember about Yosemite from your very young years that you get nostalgic about?
Not really. All I remember is when I went walking with my mother down the alleyway and she threw milk bottles at a bear that was trying to get into a garbage can.
And when's the first time that you got this idea, you know, it would be fun to fly an airplane someday?
Well, when I saw the magazine with the wasps on it.
Life magazine.
Life, yes. I just wanted to start flying, yes.
And some people don't know what I'm talking about when I say wasp. We're not talking about the insect or the aircraft carrier during World War II. We're talking about the women's Air Force service pilots. And
yes.
The work that you did at the time was often overlooked, but since has been celebrated. You're one of many surviving wasps who got to receive the Congressional Gold Medal a few years back. But 70 years ago, this was something completely new. What made you think that you could be a pilot of one of these big military planes?
I just wanted to do it. I didn't think I could do it.
And for people who aren't familiar with the wasps, how would you explain the purpose behind the wasps?
They were service pilots.
So what does that mean? Why were the wasps so important? What were you doing?
We were just ferrying planes and taking them from the factory to the field where they were stationed.
You ladies would get these planes new from the factory, and you're flying them pretty significant distances at times.
Somewhere, yes.
How many different planes did you get to fly?
PT, BT, AD-6.
Uh-huh.
They're the trainers.
Of all the planes that you got the chance to fly, did you have a favorite?
The AT-6.
The Texan.
Texan,
and
yes.
There you were in Texas.
Yes.
What was it about the AT-6 that you liked?
Well, I don't know. Everyone liked them. We liked the challenge of getting new instruments and being able to use them. We just learned to fly the Army way.
Then once you graduated, what'd you do?
Well, I was stationed in Texas. I flew planes that had been repaired and okayed them for the men pilots to fly when they were cadets.
So I'm reading between the lines there. The plane had been repaired. Nobody knows if these planes are going to work right or not.
Not for sure.
So you're the guinea pig.
Sort of, yes.
Did that make you nervous at all? I mean, you're the test pilot for these repaired planes.
No, I had a lot of faith in them. That they were repaired right.
Uh-huh. So you would take them up, fly around. Did you have to do different maneuvers to make sure they could handle them?
Yes.
And did you ever have any situations where that plane didn't do what you wanted it to do?
I didn't have any. No, but some people may have.
Yeah, there were wasps who died during the war.
Yeah, 38.
Did you ever feel like you were doing something dangerous?
No.
Never had any hairy landings or anything?
Only one after I graduated. I was one time I was flying a captain. He had to go down there for a meeting, and I flew him down there. Well, we had a forced landing or less. And
your engine quit on you?
Went out or were going out. We didn't know.
And this is a single-engine plane.
Yes.
So if the engine goes out, that's not good.
No.
Were you nervous?
No.
How'd you figure out where to land?
Well, I knew where the fields were by my map I had.
You mean you didn't have a smartphone with GPS?
No.
You had a paper map in the cockpit?
Yes.
You looked at it, figured out where you could land?
Yes.
Was the officer nervous?
He may have been.
Had you ever practiced a landing like that before?
No, I hadn't.
So you've never done this before?
Not that kind, no.
You've lost engine power?
Not completely, no. We were just having some trouble with the magnetos.
So it was sputtering or going inconsistently or something?
Yes, it was.
But you landed it perfect?
Sure. The officer in the plane with me said, "Aren't we coming in too low?" And I just kept going in, just landed.
So Mike ratted you out a little bit there. He said that that major you were flying when your engine went out, that he was pretty scared and almost peed his pants.
He was a captain. He wasn't a major.
All right. But he was pretty scared.
I think he probably was when I came in too low at that auxiliary field.
And Mike said that auxiliary field was more like an open field, like farmland.
Yes, that's all that it was, just the farmland.
Dirt runway?
With a runway that they had put together. Runway going into the field.
And it was like a dirt runway?
Yes.
So that must have been a dusty landing.
I guess it was kind of dusty with all the dirt flying around.
But you weren't scared or nervous?
No.
Why not?
There was nothing to be scared about. Captain asked me if I knew of any fields where I could land the plane in a hurry. And I said that I just know the only one there at Cisco. It's the only one I knew about or could see on my map right away.
On the map, it probably looked like any other runway.
It didn't look like any runway at all. Just a field.
You think you could still handle it if you went up in an AT-6 tomorrow?
I doubt it. I wouldn't know all the instruments or anything. I could probably handle it after I was checked out in the different maneuvers.
Have you ever encountered people over the years that didn't know women were flying in World War II?
Yes, I've encountered people who didn't know the wasp flew or who they were or anything.
Do you clue them in? Do you tell them about it?
No.
What would you say you're most proud of, Doris?
The wings I got when I graduated.
You still have them?
Yes, I do.
Did you feel like you were doing something important for your country?
No, not at the time I didn't.
You feel that way now?
Yeah, they've told us that so many times that you feel like maybe you were doing something important.
You finally believe them?
I don't know if I believe them. It was a good feeling to be a graduate of the WASP. I liked it very much. I like flying. Nothing else compares to it, and it's a wonderful feeling. And we were very sad when they shut the WASP down.
Yeah, tell me about that. What happened?
They decided they didn't need us any longer and decided to close the WASP.
They took the money away. They cut the funding for it and shut
it
down.
Yes, they did.
So what did you do? What was your response?
Well, there was nothing we could do about it.
And this may sound like a dumb question, but I think, you know, for people's understanding of the world today, maybe they wonder this. So you ladies were allowed to fly these planes in the States and move aircraft around and risk your lives flying repaired airplanes and being the test pilots for them, but you weren't allowed to go overseas and fly them in combat.
We never flew overseas.
Did that ever bother you that you weren't allowed to do that?
No.
You were fine with it?
Fine with me.
Just trying to do your job.
That's right.
Today, women are allowed to fly. They're flying all over the world now in our Air Force and in our Navy.
Yes.
Do you feel like what you did made that possible?
They say that we were pioneers to flying in the service.
How'd you meet this guy named Mike?
I met him in Florence, Italy. His neighbor was with me, and we rode in the same car, so she introduced him to me.
What'd you think of him?
I didn't think much of him.
He didn't make a strong first impression?
No.
Well, where did the 67 years of marriage come from then? What changed?
Everything. I got to know him. I didn't know him before that.
What was it about him that you thought, hey, maybe this guy's husband material?
His family.
Are you going to tell me the secret?
What's the secret?
Well, that's what I want to know. You've been married for 67 years.
Yes.
What's your secret?
Oh, love, I guess. When you love someone and you get to know them.
And you two built this house together?
Yes, he built it mainly. I worked on some of the closets and cupboards and things in the kitchen.
You raised four kids here?
Yes.
What have you enjoyed about living here in this part of California?
Well, I liked it out here because I could see everywhere, 360 degrees.
Well, is there anything else that you want to say?
No.
Well, can I say something?
Sure.
I just want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country.
Thank you for interviewing me. But I don't like being interviewed because I don't feel like I did that much.
You think your husband did something worth talking about?
Yes, I think he did a lot in the service.
Well, let's ask him about it. Mike Wanty is 96 years old. He grew up not here in Oakdale, but in Oakland on the east side of San Francisco Bay.
I was born and raised in Oakland.
What'd you do as a young boy? What kind of tricks were you up to?
I was very fortunate in that there was a small group of fellas my age that lived right in the neighborhood, and we all palled around together, and we made huts and did all kinds of things. We worked on a Model A once, taking it apart, putting it back together, climbing trees and building huts. We built beautiful huts. Then I went to high school, Oakland High School. It was close enough that we could come home for lunch if we ran fast. I'd come home with a couple of the fellas that lived in the neighborhood. We'd have lunch and come and go. Oh, I was in different projects in high school. I was on the track team, which was pretty good. I ran the 440 and the relays. I graduated and went to the University of Oregon.
What made you want to go to Oregon?
I really don't know. I didn't want to go to Cal. They were having riots there. When I was younger, with my father, we used to go fishing in Diamond Lake, Oregon. And I liked Oregon. And I actually thought, of course, then there wasn't anything about a war, that I'd probably graduate and then settle in Oregon.
Hmm.
But it didn't work out that way.
Did you have any ambitions about what you thought you'd do when you grew up? A dream that you wanted to chase or anything like that?
Yeah, I kind of always wanted to be a geologist, and I liked the oil business.
So you went to Oregon, and that's what you studied, geology?
Yeah, and geography. I had two majors.
How were the sports teams at Oregon back then?
Very good. The first year that I was there, they won the national championship, the very first basketball team. Oregon won the national championship.
At old MacArthur Court, huh?
I remember Wintermute because he was a friend. He was the center, I think. And I used to know all the guys' names, but I've forgotten now.
Uh-huh.
And I joined a fraternity there, Chi Psi. Worked there for 4 years in the kitchen. And then I had another job. I used to get up at 4 in the morning and go to downtown, clean this woman's apparel shop. Russell's Apparel Shop for women. And then that day when Pearl Harbor was bombed, I had been working in that morning. So I came back, and as I got to the fraternity house, there was a lot of commotion, and the girls were crying. My friend, who I went to Oregon, worked on his ranch and everything, he came up with a broom and put it on my shoulder and started going hip, 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 marching. I wondered what in the hell was coming off. These people looked like they're all crazy. And then a couple of girls came and hugged me and crying. Finally, they said, we're at war with Japan.
That's how you found out?
That's how I found out.
How long was it till you learned that some of the guys that you'd been going to school with there at Oregon had died on the USS Arizona?
Oh, I don't know. Probably through the girl I was going around with. Her brother was one of them.
But what did that do to you? I mean, these are guys that, they weren't just names or pictures somewhere. These were guys that you knew, that you hung around with.
Well, I don't know. I really don't. It happened, and we were at war now, and we were all concerned because we had to join civil service, I think, at that time. And at that time, I joined the Navy, which was in February.
But so you still have the rest of your senior year to finish up at the University of Oregon.
Yeah.
So were you able to graduate before you went in the Navy?
Oh, yes, you had to. In order to go to the midshipman school, you had to be a graduate.
Uh-huh.
That was a must. I wasn't called for a while. After I graduated, I had about 2 months before I went back east to Chicago to midshipman school there in downtown Chicago.
Did you have an idea of what you wanted to do in the Navy?
Yeah, they asked you, and I signed up for submarines and destroyers. And so when I graduated, I had orders to go to San Diego to torpedo school. And I was down there because they had a new torpedo. Now, the old torpedo were misfiring too much. The Battle of Midway, a lot of the planes that dropped torpedoes into the Japanese aircraft carriers didn't go off. A lot of them. There was a lot of trouble, so they had to make a new torpedo. So they were looking for officers to be torpedo officers that would know the new torpedo. So we had to pull them apart, put them back together again several times, and in the dark, too. So I passed, and then I was shipped to Hawaii, to the sub base, to either get on a sub, and the destroyers were right next to it. I guess I was there for 10 days, and I got orders to get on the Lardner pretty close to the 1st of June, 43. Yeah.
I just got to ask you, I don't mean this disrespectfully, but what were you thinking? You volunteered for submarines or destroyers? Those are the two most dangerous places you can be in the Navy.
Yeah, my mother didn't like it.
I bet. What were you thinking? Why'd you do that?
I don't know. I always really wanted subs.
Yeah?
But I didn't qualify, and they didn't have an open billet at the time either.
Uh-huh.
But they had an open billet on the Lardner for a torpedo officer. But as it turned out, when I went on the Lardner, and the captain said, I see you got a billet here to be a torpedo officer. He says, we have one. But he says, we don't have a first lieutenant. You're the first lieutenant. And I just kind of stood there. I said, well, I don't know what the first lieutenant does. It didn't make any difference to him. I was the first lieutenant then.
Did you find out what a first lieutenant does?
Oh, yeah, very fast.
And we're going to find out when we come back from this first commercial break. We'll learn which legendary admiral made a personal impact on Mike's Navy career and why this sailor says he hates Christmas and one familiar song in particular. Don't get the wrong idea. Once you hear the story, I promise it'll make sense. Find photos of Mike and Doris at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country, and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.